Headlines: Iran's capital hosts an international conference on the General Soleimani School of Thought, a day after the third anniversary of his assassination by the U.S. Staying with Iran, the country warns Israel against any possible adventurism, saying it reserves the right to respond to threats. Also in our headlines, Russia raises the death toll of its servicemen killed in a Ukrainian missile attack to 89. Hello and welcome, everybody. Our top story for this half hour: the first international conference on the martyr General Soleimani School of Thought kicks off in the Iranian capital, Tehran. Iran's parliament speaker opened the event with an address in which he highlighted the personality and endeavors of General Soleimani. Mohammad Baqir Ghalibaf, who had personal friendship with the slain commander, said, "Soleimani emerged as a towering personality despite being born and brought up in a remote region. He called General Soleimani one of the most influential figures in West Asia who fought against terrorism and imperialism through his life." The parliament speaker said that Soleimani had understood very well how to deal with the global arrogance and bring them to the negotiating table. Ghalibaf underlined that the martyr general brought dignity and security not only to Iran, but the Muslim world as a whole. We're now joined by Bisoumi Shah Ahmadi, who's with us on hand from the international conference that's being held in the Iranian capital, Tehran. Bisoumi, tell us more about this conference and also about the importance and significance of the title of this conference, which is the School of Thought of Martyred Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani.
Well, Bardia, as you mentioned so yourself, it is very important to highlight the topic of this conference, which is the School of Thought of the martyr, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, the philosophy that he represents. I was just talking to a couple of the participants of this conference. As I told you before, these are mostly university professors, researchers, and political activists who are attending this conference, and they've been studying the life and the legacy of General Qasem Soleimani. One of them gave me a very interesting example. He said that his school of thought and his way of life was like a bottle of perfume that was broken when he was martyred. And now the scent of this perfume can be felt everywhere in the region. So basically, he was trying to give us an analogy of how the school of thought and the philosophy of the martyr, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, has spread in the region. And, of course, regarding the conference itself, Bardia, this is a two-day conference, as I told you before. We're expecting panel discussions in the afternoon and tomorrow, also in a different venue. There will be also some addresses by the political activists and the participants, university professors, which have come from different countries across the world. It is actually very interesting for me to see that there are representatives from most countries here. We have African nations having representatives here. We have scholars and researchers from Russia and, of course, the Caucasus. This is not basically limited to the Middle East, is what I want to highlight here. And, of course, we were expecting tomorrow's event to end in an award ceremony, Bardia, but I have been informed that the award ceremony will be delayed because they are expecting more research papers to be handed to the secretariat of this conference. So I will be giving you more updates regarding how this two-day conference will be ending later as I find out myself.
All right, thanks a lot, Bisoumi Shah Ahmadi, joining us from the Iranian capital tonight. Elsewhere, Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi praised Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani as a symbol of resistance and fight against terrorism and global arrogance. Raisi was addressing a huge crowd that gathered in the capital, Tehran, to commemorate the third assassination anniversary of General Soleimani. He said the anti-terror icon exposed the myth that the United States is an invincible power. The Iranian president underlined that remembering General Soleimani sends a message of hope to freedom seekers around the world. Raisi called Soleimani a unifying force for the Iranian society, adding that the slain general is now dear to millions of people globally. The president reiterated that Iran will never forget the assassination of the iconic figure and will definitely take revenge on those involved in his killing.
Iran has commemorated the third martyrdom anniversary of General Qasem Soleimani. People from different walks of life descended on the Imam Khomeini Musalla in central Tehran to pay tribute to General Qasem Soleimani. The slain commander was a man who was widely revered as a national hero for all his efforts in the fight against terrorism and global arrogance. Addressing a ceremony, Iran's president, Ebrahim Raisi, said the message of attending the commemoration of Qasem Soleimani to all free men and women is that they should stand up and resist arrogance and block the way of oppressors and arrogant people.
Without a doubt, the reward of a national hero and a hero of the Islamic community is to protect all divine values. Commemorating General Qasem Soleimani is a global face of fighting arrogance and tyranny, glorifying all good things, and declaring hatred and aversion to oppression, arrogance, and domination.
The United States assassinated General Qasem Soleimani, the commander of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, along with deputy commander of Iraq's anti-terror popular mobilization units, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandas, in a drone strike near the Baghdad International Airport on January 3, 2020. General Soleimani is well known for dislodging Daesh terrorists in Iraq back in 2017. He also spearheaded major operations in Syria that resulted in liberating key areas from the terror group.
I have come here to honor General Qasem Soleimani. Although the enemy assassinated him, we are here to show the world that every one of us is Qasem Soleimani. His legacy of resistance will remain for good, and we will continue his path.
General Qasem Soleimani was an international personality and made great achievements in the region. Therefore, not only the Iranian people, but also the people of Iraq, Lebanon, and other countries in the region honor him. He was truly a role model for those who want to fight terrorism and resist arrogant powers.
Iranians believe although the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani put an end to his life, his legacy will continue forever, and he will remain as a role model for all resistance and anti-terror movements.
General Qasem Soleimani's personality was outstanding, not only in terms of decimating Daesh in Iraq and Syria, but also in sending out positive vibes and courage to everyone. It was actually a symbol of international resistance who redefined the rules of leadership. Salman Kujrib, Tehran.
Lebanese and Palestinian factions in Lebanon have also commemorated the third anniversary of the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Iraqi Commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandas. Mariam Saleh reports from Beirut.
The martyrs has given the resistance front additional strength.
As a result of this assassination, Iran took even more determined stances, and they did not fear any U.S. threats. We heard high-level stances from the Supreme Leader and the Iranian leaders. We saw a funeral unprecedented in human history, where millions participated, a rebirth of the revolution in Iran, courage in shelling the Ain al-Assad base, and readiness to go to war.
Hezbollah's leader also said that after the assassination, the deal of the century ran into problems, and resistance factions in Palestine gained popularity. He said resistance forces in the entire region have been steadily progressing over the past couple of years. Lebanese and Palestinian factions in Lebanon commemorated the anniversary of the assassination of the two prominent leaders in several events, which will continue throughout the week. The representative of Hezbollah's Christian ally said that the blood of martyrs is what makes the endeavor of the resistance sacred.
Martyr Qasem Soleimani did not represent one specific group or sect or religion. He represents all the oppressed in the world, and he supports the primary cause for the entire nation, which is the cause of Palestine.
Palestinian resistance movement Hamas noted that it was the direct support and training of General Soleimani that helped the resistance alliance in the entire region reach a state in which it can impose its conditions on the U.S. and Israel and deter their threats.
The Resistance Alliance and its project does not confront the Zionist entity only. It also targets the colonial scheme of the U.S., which supports the Zionist project. Therefore, when the leader Qasem Soleimani helped strengthen the resistance in the region, he was targeted by the U.S. since he was confronting its massive project. This has transformed the resistance into an extended front facing the bigger project, which targets the region.
General Soleimani, the commander of the Quds Force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, and his Iraqi companion Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, the deputy leader of Iraq's popular mobilization units, were martyred along with several other people in a U.S. drone strike on January 3, 2020.
3 years have passed since the martyrdom of Haj Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, yet for many it is as if it occurred today. For the leaders of the resistance, their martyrdom together seems to have given leverage to a growing regional alliance. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Well, Iran's ambassador to the United Nations warns against any military adventurism by Israel, saying that Tehran reserves the right to respond to Israeli threats when necessary. Amir Saidi Ravani made the remarks in a letter addressed to the UN Secretary General and the Security Council chief. He said Tel Aviv's threats to use force against Iran's nuclear facilities are a violation of international law and the UN Charter. He said such threats are made as Iran's peaceful nuclear program is monitored by the UN nuclear watchdog. Yiravani highlighted Israel's previous acts of terror against Iran, in particular the assassination of Iranian nuclear scientists. He also warned that the regime would face the consequences for such crimes. The Humanity Eye Center for Rights and Development in Yemen says it has compiled reports, statistics, and hard evidence that prove the Saudi-led coalition committed war crimes on a massive scale, that is, in 2022. Yusuf Maudi has the details.
While the world celebrates the start of a new year with festivities and a display of fireworks, Yemen ushers in the new year with fireworks from artillery shelling by the Saudi-led coalition. In just the first hours of 2023, Saudi Arabia carried out a series of artillery shelling in northern Yemen close to Saudi borders. According to the reports, at least 18 innocents were injured in the latest attacks. This comes after a year of bloodshed, according to the Humanity Eye Center for Rights and Development. In their latest report for the year 2022, the center revealed statistics of war crimes committed by the Saudi-led coalition. According to the report, over 3,000 Yemenis were killed and injured in 2022. Humanity Eye Center statistic and research analyst Gais Jamal reports that these crimes occurred near the Saudi border during a ceasefire.
In the year 2022, most of the crimes were committed on residents living in bordering districts with Saudi Arabia, despite the announcement of a ceasefire. The only thing that stopped was the airstrikes. However, Saudi rockets and artillery shelling continued. There was no ceasefire in the districts near the Saudi border. From the first day the ceasefire was announced, the attacks continued until this day.
Saudi Arabia and its coalition also attacked airports, Yemeni ports, and almost 15,000 homes, livestock farms, and communication stations in 2020, according to the report. Humanity Eye says it has all the evidence to prove that Saudi-led coalition committed war crimes on a mass scale.
We have met with French rights groups and presented to them reports with evidence that expose how Saudi Arabia and its allies and European states played a direct role in supporting Saudi Arabia with weapons that were used to commit war crimes on Yemenis. We presented all necessary evidence to this French rights group, and they have filed a case in court against Mohammed bin Salman and bin Zayed for the war crimes committed. This case is currently pending.
The European legal system is unlikely to bring any Saudi or UAE official to justice, which is why Yemenis want justice now.
We are calling on our government to take tough military actions against the aggressors. They are occupying our lands, destroying our homes, and killing us, and we will not remain silent for much longer. We are a free Yemeni nation with a great civilization. We have the right to defend ourselves.
The Yemeni people are suffering from the blockade and the oppression being spearheaded by Saudi Arabia.
Therefore, we call on the Yemeni government to take decisive actions now to lift the blockade and end the suffering of the people.
As the conflict enters a new year, tensions are steadily rising on all active battlefronts in Yemen between Saudi-led forces and the Yemeni army. If a peaceful resolution is not reached soon, an all-out war is likely to ensue.
Pressure is beginning to mount on the Yemeni government to end the blockade imposed by the Saudi-led coalition as millions of Yemenis continue to suffer. Yemenis we spoke with are calling on the Ansarullah movement to end the siege now by any means necessary. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
Russia says the death toll from Ukraine's attack on a building that housed Russian soldiers in Donetsk has risen to 89. The strike in the town of Makivka was carried out on New Year's Eve. It was one of the deadliest strikes in the Ukraine war. The Russian Defense Ministry says massive use of cell phones by soldiers on the night was the main reason for the deadly strike. Ukraine has claimed a far higher casualty figure, saying around 400 died in the strike. Russia had previously said the building was struck by six U.S.-made HIMARS rockets. After the attack, Russian nationalists and some lawmakers demanded punishment for the commanders they accused of ignoring dangers. British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has assured Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky that he can count on long-term support of the United Kingdom. The pledge came after the recent Russian drone strikes on Ukraine. On Saturday night, several UAVs struck the capital, Kiev, and other cities, leaving three people dead and dozens injured. That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Bazaar.
No matter where you're from or who you are, one thing that brings people together is a good meal. Everyone has a favorite food. It's a great way to connect with others, experience culture, and explore new flavors. And the food industry caters to our tastes, which is the main driver for the expansion of this sector. The food industry is made up of a complex network of activities related to farming, production, supply, and a host of services and products. So it's no surprise that this sector also plays a significant role in the economic development of any nation. Hello again and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. I'm your host, Ali Reza Ikhtiarzadeh. This week, we will venture through Iran's food industry while shining the spotlight on meat production. We will explore this industry's contributions to the national economy. We wanted to learn more about the journey meat products take to finally reach grocery store shelves and dinner tables. So to become more familiar with food production, we visited a meatpacking business on the outskirts of the capital, Tehran. This particular producer was established 15 years ago and has become a familiar name in the industry. The meatpacking market is composed of many sectors within the market. One of the primary concerns for any company packaging meat is the ability to deliver fresh products to consumers. This can happen in various ways and is heavily dependent on the type of meat that will be packaged. For example, this company has several production halls dedicated explicitly to particular activities. Because not all meat comes in the same size or can be handled with the same machine, there are different production halls for each meat type. Red meats, such as lamb and cow, require larger machines and more space, while poultry, such as chicken, require smaller machines comprising closed-circuit production lines. But why does this company use a closed-circuit production line? This ensures the meat passing through each stage is kept cool and free of foreign contaminants. More importantly, such a process guarantees that each item is uniformly cut and packaged while maintaining sanitary conditions crucial for quality and safety. Now, the modern food industry uses a wide variety of sophisticated technologies, making production more efficient. It has also reduced menial human labor, freeing up hands for other, more complex tasks. In case you didn't know, and many don't, Iran has indigenized a lot of technology and machinery needed in the food industry. Moreover, these machines play a crucial role in maintaining food quality and safety. For most companies in the food industry, the high-quality output is deeply hinged on the raw material they use. In the case of this company, they use free-range livestock that is pasture-fed from some of the most famous animal-rearing regions of the country. While most meat-packing companies have their own slaughterhouses, this one maintains contracts with livestock farmers who slaughter the animals before sending them to the packing company. The food industry is one of the most heavily regulated sectors in the nation. That is because quality and safety are important aspects for consumers. This company makes its products along the lines of Iran's Food and Drug Administration guidelines and the National Standards Bureau. It has also received international certificates for production and safety, meaning it can easily export its products too. Additionally, this company has created numerous job opportunities for the community while maintaining the highest production standards. What makes a company stand out among others in this highly competitive industry is not only the quality of products, but also the services it provides to its consumers. While the food industry has not been directly sanctioned by the United States, these harsh measures have hindered international banking and money transfers. This means many in this sector cannot import important machine components, which are still not locally manufactured. The basis of the food industry has always been agricultural production. Without the output of this sector, the food industry would not thrive as it does now. That's why Iran has a very robust agrarian industry. But agriculture is not limited to farming alone. It also includes livestock rearing, dairy, beekeeping, aquaculture, and so much more. Plus, exports from this strategic industry have also generated millions in foreign revenues, contributing to the national economy. First, let's look at the country's meat production as a whole. Based on the National Livestock Exporters Assembly, domestic needs for red meat roughly stands at 60 million heads of light livestock annually. Last year, the country had 72 million heads of these animals, meaning 12 million were surplus and could be used for various exports. According to official figures, this year, 51,000 tons of red meat were produced up to the month of May alone. However, not all livestock are raised for their meat. They are also used for dairy production. Looking at statistics from Iran's Customs Administration, roughly $800 million of raw milk is exported annually. Next, we have the agriculture sector, which mainly produces raw materials for other food production. Data from the Customs Administration shows that some 7 million tons of agricultural and food products were exported last year. This amount was worth nearly $5 billion and reveals an 8% growth in export values compared to 2020. Looking more closely at these exports, around half of this revenue was raked in by 10 major agricultural products. The undisputed king of all agricultural exports is saffron, which brought $1 billion in trade. Next came pistachios, valued at $540 million, followed by watermelon and tomatoes in terms of value. Following the success of the first industrial park in 1890, more of these parks began mushrooming all over the world. Industrial zones are viewed as an effective way of increasing synergies between industrial activities through sharing resources. Furthermore, they drive commerce and business for greater economic stability among global and domestic participants. These days, industrial parks are key engines for economic growth and financial security. We are going to explore Iran's industrial parks. We will examine why industrial parks and estates are so important to the national economy. To become more familiar with industrial parks, we visited one on the outskirts of the capital city of Tehran. It was originally launched roughly 3 decades ago and has since grown into one of the most densely packed industrial zones of the province. Spanning some 260 hectares of land, this establishment is home to hundreds of producers active in several production fields. So how does this establishment work, and what makes industrial parks attractive to businesses? One answer is that these zones offer unique services that support investors and companies. However, one of the most important advantages is the large plots of land fitted with the necessary infrastructure for production and distribution. Each year, thousands of tons of products are produced here. Industrial parks also provide vast amounts of space to store goods, and some have their own airports and ground terminals for cargo distribution. But that's not all. Many industrial parks are also situated in economic zones, which offer numerous benefits to businesses while cutting some of their development costs. Additionally, there are other advantages to operating in industrial zones for manufacturers who are also exporters. These include softer customs regulations and certain tax exemptions, among others. As a result, exports from these areas have also contributed millions of dollars to the national economy. Industrial zones are ideal catalysts for industrialization and economic development. They provide the infrastructure necessary for small and medium-sized enterprises to grow. These parks have emerged as the new super tonic for the unprecedented growth of urban business and commerce. But have you ever wondered how an industrial park is created? It's no easy task. Planning and launching one of these zones is considered an industry of its own. We caught up with a holding company specializing in planning and developing industrial parks in Tehran province. We wanted to see how these establishments are shaped, executed, and launched. It all starts with targeting the appropriate plot of land. This holding purchases the necessary land, which sometimes can cover hundreds of hectares. This entity carries out its activities under the National Small Industries and Industrial Parks Organization. This organization is affiliated with the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade. So, the holding links various industries with government executive branches and helps remove barriers for manufacturing units. Plus, it connects investors to businesses while handling some of the government's bureaucratic processes for national and international investors. One of the main goals of creating these parks is to support local production and increase exports. Doing so will save the country millions on importing similar goods that can be domestically produced. At its core, an industrial park is a portion of a city or land zoned for industrial use rather than residential or commercial needs. These places can be home to a host of industries and might have oil refineries, power plants, ports, and so much more. The parks serve another purpose too. They are also meant to protect the environment, as industrial parks collect factories and other manufacturing facilities in an area outside of town. Moreover, these zones foster technological learning and innovation while creating jobs. Plus, such sites provide intermediary support for institutions while promoting interdisciplinary networks. Their activities support market expansion and reach by providing services to companies that help businesses stay relevant in the competitive market. For instance, this holding company has sponsored various national and international exhibitions where companies in industrial zones can participate. They offer dozens of types of services to small and medium-sized businesses both inside industrial parks and outside these zones. It might be interesting to know that nearly every province of Iran has at least one of these holding companies that establishes industrial parks. For example, the holding company for Tehran province has already established numerous estates and sites over the years, but its activities haven't stopped there. As part of its future vision, this holding hopes to expand its activities, and one of its projects is launching more industrial parks focusing on knowledge-based production. Generally speaking, the number of industrial parks has increased by over 270-fold since the Islamic Revolution in 1979. Presently, there are over 1,000 industrial parks and zones scattered across the country. Over 830 of this total has been handed over to industrial units. That's all based on figures from the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade. All things considered, Iran's industrial zones have a bright and promising future while offering lucrative investment opportunities with big profits. The construction industry has continuously had a series of revolutions throughout history. Technological advancements have influenced the construction sector too, from durable concrete in ancient structures to smart windows that automatically open and close based on light exposure. Some materials evolved with time, others are new to the industry and address natural disasters while reflecting changing lifestyles and environmental values. Still, other materials are born out of a need to reduce construction costs. In a nutshell, structures and their materials are the building blocks of society and economic expansion. To understand the enormity of the construction industry, we visited the 22nd Annual International Building and Construction Exhibition in Tehran. Because the exhibition was sprawled over nearly 4 hectares of land, one day is not nearly enough for visitors to see the entire expo, so it ran for 3 days. This exhibition is one of the most important events in its industry. We caught up with a few companies at the exhibit to see what they were offering. Our first stop was at a booth held by a company that makes ceramic tiles. They also export their products to numerous countries. Next, we stopped by a company specializing in manufacturing faucets and kitchen and bathroom attachments. It also purchases most of its raw materials from inside the country. Like many we have seen at the event, this company has created many job opportunities directly and indirectly. Plus, it uses the latest machinery to make high-quality products that compete with foreign brands. Now, many might not think twice about it, but Iran's faucet and fixture production have been booming, so we spoke with another company that has been exporting these items for years. Industry participants say this year's Building Expo was much larger than last year's, meaning that Iran's construction industry has expanded in recent years, displaying the country's various existing and emerging capabilities in the field. Statistics show that last year some 900 domestic companies participated in the events. Also, foreign companies were present offering their goods and services. This year's exhibit hosted hundreds of foreign companies from Germany, Australia, Turkey, China, Spain, Italy, South Korea, and Malaysia, just to name a few. A wealth of products were showcased at the expo, from road and construction equipment to stones, sanitary supplies, heating and cooling systems, lifts and elevators, and so much more. Rarely has any industry offered so much versatility and variety of products as the construction industry. Events like this one offer a platform for the exchange of ideas, examining markets and opportunities for collaboration to create new products needed in the market. Next, we stopped by a display for a company specializing in making various inset kitchen products. We asked them about their goods and approach to challenges posed by the US sanctions. Walking through the exhibit, we ran into a company that makes metal fittings for stairs, windows, and areas that require spatial separations.
All right, now is the time for me to take a little break here and give the floor to my good friend out in the field who has prepared a report for us.
What's going on, guys? Well, actually, it's been a while that I've been looking for a practical pair of shoes, and today I decided to come to the first and oldest industrial shoe producer in Iran and the biggest distributor in the Middle East. Looking around, I can see a wide range of shoes in different colors, and this is what makes it difficult for me to choose the right one. To be honest with you guys, I've always been excited to learn more about the manufacturing process of shoes. For this reason, I asked this company to walk me through the production line of footwear. So don't go anywhere, stay with me. I wanted to step right into the factory to see the production line, but I just realized that every little piece has a process here. Now I'm in the designing room, and there's the thing that is called the last of the shoes, and it was really interesting to me to see how the shoes that we wear on a day-to-day basis is turned from to this. Now I'm going to give you an overview of how it is turned into the shoes that we wear. There's tape that is applied on the last, and to draw the design and create the prototype for different collection of shoes. And then it is sent off to stitching section to cut out the pattern on the necessary materials. And we've got different materials, different leather materials with different patterns and different colors. And finally, after the whole thing is approved, it is sent off to the production line. Partly due to the number of pieces used to make one shoe, constructing footwear is a true craft. The pieces needed to make the shoe are cut from high-quality leather, then next in the shoe manufacturing process comes stamping. In the factory, there are various departments that each performs different stages of the production process. When a department has finished their role, the soles are forwarded to the next department in line. Right off from the designing section, they get into the production line, and all the pieces are die-cutted. They are cut into different pieces to finally send them for gluing and stitching to ensure all the pieces are stuck together. All right, now it's time to move to the final section. Shoe manufacturing involves numerous steps to put all the pieces together. Assembling the shoe is the step in the production where the magic happens. Here, all the pieces, including the one that was just sewn, are fitted to form finished shoes. During assembling, the upper is bonded to the outsole. But before this happens, the insole is attached to the last and the upper ridge is placed on the insole to allow the shaft to be stitched to the wet later on and finally give the shoe its final shape. Simple? It is not as simple as you think. It is such a demanding job. I call this stage the birth of the shoes because the pairs of the shoes are taken off from the mold to finally move on to the final stage, which is trimming. I'm gonna give him these shoes, and what he does is cutting out the edges of the shoes to be completely trimmed and sent to the other guy for buffing, waxing, and polishing off the shoes. And finally, they are nice and shiny, and they are ready to be boxed up and shipped out to customers all across the country. Well, what is so significant about this company is the durability and the guarantee of its shoes over time. So for this reason, I was so curious to see what the secret is behind this quality. Now I'm in the quality control sector to see what happens exactly. All right, what happens here is after the shoes sampling are approved, they are sent off, like different parts of the shoes are sent off from the production sector to the quality control sector. And there are several machines that each of them does is dedicated to a specific style of shoes. For example, formal shoes, athletic shoes, children's shoes. But now, what is so exciting, I'm going to walk you through, or I'm going to draw your attention to the safety shoes. Can you ever imagine a 20 kilogram weight falling in a horrifying manner on your shoes? That is something beyond my imagination. So I want to tell you today that this is the machine. It is called the impact tester that does the same thing. So let's zoom in and see what happens exactly. But of course, it's super horrifying, so I need to keep my distance. Wow, what a sound. You see, it's really, it's like a horror movie, the sounds that I listen, that I hear in the movies. So you need to keep your distance. And since the front of the shoes needs to be fully backed for workers who have demanding jobs in harsh conditions, this machine was created to, form or place this mold in the front of the shoes to protect workers from any sort of damages. So this is really mind-boggling, and it's really a lot to get my mind around. By the end of the day, around 1,400 types of footwear are sold extensively in this company's chain stores. This wide range offers various styles for people of all ages in the society, such as men, women, kids, sports, and as I showed you earlier, safety shoes. After I took a real-life tour into the footwear production world, I gained a broader perspective on how a single pair of shoes is actually made. Wow, for me it was really amusing to take a look at the behind the scenes of shoemaking. And now that I have all those processes in mind, it's time to see if I can find a practical pair of shoes. Alright, now I realize that there are so many factors that play a significant role in choosing a standard pair of shoes, such as the raw material, the comfort, the beauty, the design, and the color. What I appreciate most about this company is the fact that it offers a constellation of footwear in various colors. Shoes for men, women, children, and even safety shoes, as I mentioned earlier. And we've got sandals, sleepers, and of course in different quality, we've got leather shoes, linen shoes, and just you name it. Among all these footwear, I chose this one, which I really loved the way it looks, and the color, and of course the comfort. I gave it a try, and yeah, I'm going home with this pair of shoes. And finally, I found the one that I was looking for. I hope that you got a better understanding of what a pair of shoes goes through before it reaches into your hands. I've been Sarah Dema.
That covers our program for today. On behalf of the entire team, thank you for tuning in.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, brothers and sisters, dear listeners, welcome to Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. I am your host, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi. One of the keys of life is to avoid harm to oneself. And we begin by, obviously, taking care of it. Taking care of the body, I mean. The Ahlul Bayt, alayhum as-salam, they have given us specific instructions to maintain and keep the health of the body. In one of the previous episodes, we said that the Ahlul Bayt has commanded us to cut our nails, trim our mustaches. Now, one may ask, why so much emphasis and a hadith in regards to cutting one's nails? Now, I'm glad you're asking that question because the Ahlul Bayt have answered. We see a hadith from Al-Imam Muhammad Al-Baqir alayhi as-salam. He says, إِنَّمَا قُصَّتْ الْأَظَافِرُ لِأَنَّهَا مَقِيلُ الشَّيْطَانِ وَمِنْهُ يَكُونَ النِّسْيَانِ. He said, nails are meant to be cut for one reason, and that is, it is the place where the shaitan hides. And from that, forgetfulness happens. Now, you might be wondering, how and why would the shaitan hide under your nails? Well, let's look at this from a different perspective or from a different angle. Back in the day, people weren't aware of such a thing called viruses, at least not to, you know, a full scale. They knew there were sicknesses, but viruses and bacteria. So back in the day, the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, when they want to refer to something evil or something bad, they refer to it as shaitan, because shaitan is the source of all evil, right? So when the Imam alayhi as-salam, he says it is the place where the shaitan hides, it is not literal that the shaitan himself hides under the nails. Rather, the evil, which is now we get to know it is bacteria and viruses. So during the day, me and you, we do a lot of things with our hands. We touch a lot of things. We, I don't know, move around from one place to another. So most of these bacteria and most of these viruses, they go under the nails. So they become a place where evil hides, as technically referred to by the Imam as shaitan. So what we need to do is make sure that when we cut them, we cut our nails and clean it, clean under it, so the bacteria is no longer there. So don't take the shaitan as a literal word for the shaitan himself, rather for the evil itself, which is now in medical science, we got to know it is actually viruses and bacteria. And then the Imam alayhi salam says, the problem with these bacteria and viruses that hides under your nail are actually one of the causes to cause a person to forget things. Most of the times we complain, always forgetting things. I can't remember where I put my keys. I can't remember what I did. I can't remember this and I can't remember that. And one of the reasons that Al-Bayt alayhim salam say, maybe it is the bacteria and the viruses that have hidden under your nails, that when you eat, when you do things or drink or touch your mouth, you make them reach your system or your immune system. Therefore, it causes a person to be forgetful. So the Ahlul Bayt, they say, cut your nails, keep yourself safe. Let us take a short break and then we continue right after.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Keys of Life, Mafatih al-Hayat, from IRIB English Radio. Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam, al-Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam, he also tells us why we need to cut our nails. He says, one of the best places for shaitan to hide and not be seen when it comes to the human body is that he lives under his nails. And again, as we said, we're not looking at shaitan as the actual creature that hides under the nails. Rather, it is the bacteria and it is the viruses. And the Imam says there's no better place in the body for viruses and bacteria to hide under than the nails themselves. And obviously, because when we are moving around, and let's assume we are in the corona era where we have masks and everything else, and sometimes when we eat, we make sure we're eating proper food and this and that, so we're kind of not letting too much bacteria and viruses into our stomachs. But when it comes to the outside body, they hide under the nails. And the nails, because they're attached to our fingers, to our hands, and we're constantly using our hands to eat with, to drink with, sometimes to, I don't know, put them in our mouths for a reason or two. So we make sure by our own doings that we pass these bacteria and these viruses into our system. So the Imam says there's no better place for viruses and bacteria to hide under than your nails. So imagine it is a hidden enemy that's, you know, making a trap for you, you know, and waiting for the right time, for the right opportunity to attack, and that is under the nails. Also, he said, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, تقليم الأظافر يوم الجمعة يؤمن من الجذام والجنون والبرص والعمى. Cutting your nails on Friday, it keeps you safe from number of diseases, one being leprosy, and two being insanity, and three being blind. All these things, these are diseases that might happen to a person and sicknesses that a person might suffer during his day. And they happen because when a person gets a virus that infects his system or a bacteria that attacks his system as well, that causes leprosy, madness, insanity, blindness, and so on. And so the Imam says you need to cut your nails every Friday. And he says, if you can't cut them, then rub them against a rough surface just to get rid of them. That's how important it is for me and you to make sure that we are cutting our nails. And he also said, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, من قلم أظافره وقص شاربه في كل جمعة. He who cut his nails and trims his mustache every Friday, ثم قال, and he says, بسم الله وبالله وعلى سنة محمد وآل محمد. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will give ummah, he says, أُعْطِيَ بِكُلِّ قِلَامَةٍ وَجْزَازَةٍ أَتْقُ رَقَبَةٍ مِنْ وَلْدِ إِسْمَعِيلٍ. For every nail that you cut, for every hair that you trim, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will give you the reward of freeing a servant or a slave, not just any slave, from Wildi Ismail, meaning a Muslim person. So the reward for that is too much for us to even comprehend, just for cutting our nails and trimming our mustaches. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast,
to the field of dreams. Hear the children's cries.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.